Okay, so we'll do Torah and Tea today, the portion of Pinchas, and we're going to talk first a little bit about also about the previous Rebbe, who actually, when he was freed of prison, it was actually in the portion of Pinchas. This year, Yud Beis Tammuz was in the portion of Chukas Bolok. We learned last Shabbos, we read Chukas Bolok together. That year was in the portion of Pinchas. Yud Beis Tammuz was in the portion of Pinchas. But Yud Gimel Tammuz, you know, his 2 days, was actually in the portion of Pinchas as well. The 12th and the 13th of Tammuz. The reason why there is 12 and 13 is because he was told on the 12th that he was free to go home from exile. But in order for him to get the official documentation, it was closed the offices at that day. He had to wait till the next day. So I guess we have 2 days to celebrate. We celebrate the 12th and the 13th. The 13th, even this year, was in the portion of Pinchas. The Rebbe finds a connection between Beis Yud Gimel Tammuz, the previous Rebbe, with Parshas Pinchas. Matter of fact, it's not so difficult to find a parallel. But first, it's interesting to see that the name Pinchas is actually the gematria of Yitzchak. Mm-hmm. Same numerical value. Now, if you noticed on the board here, Pinchas is spelled with a yud. Sometimes you can spell it with a yud. When Pinchas is spelled with a yud, so you have 90, pei yud is 90, 90 and 50 is 140. And 60 makes 200, and Ches makes 208. So that makes 208. And Yitzchak, Yud and Tzadik, makes 100, and Kuf is another 100, with the Ches make 208. So it has the same gematria. So besides the fact that it comes out, the actual redemption was in Parshas Pinchas, and actually the previous Rebbe was also born on the 12th day of Tammuz, which is also in the portion of Pinchas. Somehow, a lot of the Rebbe's life is associated with the parshas of Pinchas. Now, Pinchas has also a connection with Yosef. The previous Rebbe's name is Yosef Yitzchak. So Yitzchak is the exact gematria, the exact numerical value. So that's kind of obvious. But even the name Yosef is also connected with Pinchas, because we say about Pinchas ben Elozer, right? So who was Elozer's, who was Pinchas' father? Elozer. It says about Elozer that he took himself, his wife was from the daughters of Putiel. What does it exactly mean, Putiel? There's various different interpretations. One interpretation is that his wife was from the descendant or a daughter of the Putiel. Who is Putiel? Putiel was Yosef. Rashi brings that down. He was Yosef showed a tremendous amount of courage. The fact that he could ignore his Yetzer Hara. He had the wife of Potiphar after him, and she pushed him, and he stood strong. So he sort of ignored his Yetzer Hara. And so that's why it's called, the word Putiel means pitpet, meaning in Hebrew what it means is that he sort of ignored his Yetzer Hara. But nevertheless, we see that when we talk about Elozer, we call him a descendant of Yosef, Mzera Yosef, Shepit Ben Yetzer Hara. So Yosef is also connected to Pinchas in that way, because Pinchas is son of Elozer, who married in the seed of Yosef, who pitpet the Yetzirah. But in any event, we see the name fits in. But actually, when you read the story about Pinchas, you get a picture of someone who took action in a very dangerous way, even if in a situation where he didn't really have to do it. Strange kind of a halacha. Most of the laws, if you come to the Beis Din, you ask Beis Din, what do I do? And Beis Din gives you a clear directive, what the halacha is. But in the case of Pinchas, in which there was a relationship between a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, the law is not clear what needs to be done. The zealot, like Pinchas, he went and he killed them both. He killed the man and the woman, as we read in the parsha. But he didn't have to do that. It wasn't a clear halacha. What he did was, and we'll see soon, he endangered his life even in a place where he did not have a clear instruction. As you know, also, there were many of the leading rabbis. Moshe was there, and Aaron was there, and there was nobody took action over there. It was actually, I don't know, Elazar was there, but there was people that were much senior than Pinchas, and the person that was doing the act was actually a leader of the tribe of Shimon. And so the question is, he didn't have to do it, and yet he chose to go ahead and endanger his life, and he went and he took action. Now, the fact that he did what he did was not only that it wasn't obligatory and he endangered his life, but in a way he actually endangered his soul as well, because it's brought down in the Medrash that the rabbis were actually not happy with what he did. The rabbis were not happy with what he did over there, and it wasn't very clear at the time that he did it that what he did was actually the right thing, and like I said, the rabbis objected to it. That means that it wasn't something which was so he actually took a very big risk, not only physically, that he could have lost his life easily by all the tribe of Shimon, but he could have also lost his soul, because if the rabbis weren't happy, that means what he did was murder, and he wasn't supposed to do that, so then he risked also his spiritual standing. The only way we actually know that what he did was correct in the end, how we find out, is because we see, and the sages saw, what Hashem rewarded Pinchas. Hashem rewarded him that he and all of his children will be Kohanim. Technically, Pinchas was not supposed to be a Kohen. Even though he's a son of Elazar, who was a Kohen, but Pinchas was born before Elazar became a Kohen. So he was not really technically supposed to be a Kohen. But Hashem gives him a reward, gives Pinchas a reward of a Kohen. Not only that, Hashem gives to all the seed of Pinchas, loyul zarei achra, for him and his children, they'll all be Kohanim. Technically, they were Levim, they were Levites, not Kohanim. Hashem made them, him, and also all of his children that were born before, everybody of the tribe of Pinchas, became Kohanim. That's a illogical kind of a reward. Because, you know, like we usually have the joke, we say, if you're born a Kohen, you're a Kohen. If you're not born a Kohen, we can't make you into a Kohen. And here, God made him into a Kohen and made all of his seed into Kohanim, even though they weren't Kohanim. So, Eibishter, Hashem can do anything. So Hashem did that as well. But that shows to us that what Pinchas did was not only a rational, irrational, it was totally irrational. It wasn't even rational according to halacha. He went and he did beyond the rabbis. But when Hashem rewarded him with an irrational kind of reward, which means giving him, making him into a Kohen, even when he's not a Kohen, and his children are not Kohanim, and making them into a Kohen, that means that he got a non-rational reward because he acted in a non-rational way and he saved the Jews. And this is all, it came out, when did we know this? In our parsha. When, in the portion of Pinchas, when we read what Hashem rewarded him. In the previous portion, we don't know it yet for sure, because over there it just talks about what Pinchas did. But in our parsha, when we talk about the reward and we see that he got a reward, illogical reward, we knew that what he did was illogical and it was something which Hashem was very happy with, and he is the one that saved all the Jewish people. But the bottom line is that we find a very similar thing by the previous Rebbe. Now, there's one thing to say that a person, you know, takes risks for their lives, you know, but technically in the halacha there is a law. There's those mitzvahs that a person must observe even if it costs them their lives. But those are just the special mitzvahs. Most mitzvahs, you only need to do them if you can live by them. Torah says, v'chai bohem, you live with the mitzvahs. You're not supposed to die for mitzvahs. You're supposed to live with the mitzvahs. So the exception is murder or idol worship or prohibited relationships. Those are matters when they meet the condition that a person should even allow himself to be killed and not to violate what the Torah says. But other than that, one is not supposed to, and according to some commentators, one is not allowed to. Some codifiers said one is not allowed to. It's almost considered like committing suicide if you're taking a chance with your life when you're not supposed to, then you're committing suicide. And yet you see that the previous Rebbe, he actually not only did he endanger his life, because the activities that he did was against the prevailing the government over there, what they were, or the groups over there that were anti-religious groups, and they had all the power and they can do harm to the previous Rebbe. So you can say he's doing something that he's not supposed to do. He doesn't really have to do that. I guess many of the other rabbis, many of the other spiritual religious leaders, they saw the circumstances, so they said, okay, we're not going to do it because we're not supposed to do it now. But the previous Rebbe said, no. He said that he's going to fight for Yiddishkeit, even at the cost that it might cost him his life. That's one thing. But not only that, he actually almost caused himself a big loss. The Rebbe fought for various different things. And one of the things he fought for is for Jewish education. And he fought for a lot of other things. But he could have shut everything down that he worked for because of his insistence on teaching Jewish children and doing all the other activities, and this would have shut him down, totally could have shut him down. So like you see, what happened if they arrested the previous Rebbe, and if they exiled him, or they did something worse, God forbid. So he would shut down the whole operation there. Then what would the rest of the Hasid, what would they do? And yet he took that risk. So in other words, he didn't only risk his physical body, but he also lost his spiritual, because he may lose a lot more, you know, insisting on going along and doing what he was doing could cost him later on the whole organization. And where did he get that? I mean, Pinchas was the role model, but where did they both come? Because Pinchas, we said, is Gematria Yitzchak. If you look at the story about Yitzchak and Abraham, it's also a little bit surprising, because here we have Avram Avinu. He was the first one to recognize that there is God. And he went around telling the world, all the pagans, that, you know, there is nothing but Hashem. So he had a very, very important message to give to the world. Who is the one that is continuing his legacy? Who's going to be teaching it? It's going to be Yitzchak. That's his only son. There was nobody else. Not Yishmael isn't going to do it. The one who's going to do it is going to be Yitzchak. And here, the Eibishter tells him, take your son Yitzchak and bring him as an offering on the Mizbeach. So, basically, if Abraham should do something to hurt Yitzchak, not only is it that physical, his son, that he's bringing death and destruction, his only son, but he would be destroying everything that he worked for. He worked for making a place in which people should declare and learn about Hashem, learn about monotheism, about the unity of Hashem, and he would be putting it all to waste. It's a shame. So that means that it demanded a self-sacrifice. And Moshe, Avram could have said to Hashem, which he did in a way, is brought down, here you tell me that Yitzchak will be your seed and he will continue. And now, what's going to happen? But Yitzchak was ready to get with Avram to do what Hashem needed them to do. That means sacrificing also your soul, sacrificing what's the most important to you, to give it up. Because why? Because it's a situation. In that case, Hashem told Avram to take his son. But also, when there is a situation out in the real, in the street, as it was in the time of the previous Rebbe, it was a danger at that time. And that if we're not going to stand up and try our best and give it our best shot, it was possible that the entire Judaism and the spark and the coal that still glimmered a little bit in the country of there would be all extinguished and there would be nothing left. So there was basically no choice for the previous Rebbe. He didn't ask any questions. He didn't ask the ruling. So by Pinchas, there is actually a question whether he needs to, should he? We don't rule like that. But the previous Rebbe's act, we see, was the right act. And it actually, the time tells that the fact that we have today, we have a rebirth, we have a renaissance, we have Jewish revival, so to speak, in the former Soviet Union. And a lot of this would not have been possible if not for the previous Rebbe's self-sacrifice. And, you know, we're talking about literally staying there. So this is the parallel that we can draw between Pinchas and the previous Rebbe, that A, to have Mesiras Nefesh, even when the law does not really require it, and B, they were even ready to give up their spirituality when it was necessary. But that was something which, and that all comes with the name of Yitzchak, because this is based upon Yitzchak's readiness to dedication and devotion to Hashem, to totally give yourself over to Hashem. And, you know, Rebbe says many times, what do we learn from this? So we read about the previous Rebbe, but it tells us a little bit how dedicated we must be. I mean, when you see the Rebbe's endless dedication to his father-in-law, and then sometimes you wonder what pushed the Rebbe so strong, but the Rebbe was able to see that level of self-sacrifice, that level of devotion to Hashem, which is unmatched and unparalleled by anyone else. And the Rebbe recognized that. That's why the Rebbe was a 100% full-fledged chassid. He wasn't to the previous Rebbe. He was fully, you know, whatever the Rebbe, previous Rebbe said, that was because he was ultimately the dedicated servant of Hashem that the Rebbe recognized. That was his father-in-law. That's why the Rebbe has this great level of awe and endless amount of subjugation to his father-in-law, because he saw his endless level of literal mesiras nefesh, of self-sacrifice. You know, a lot of times, you know, people talk the talk, but they don't walk the walk. You know, and they talk about it, but they don't. But the previous Rebbe was the one that, you know, day in and day out, he lived with that level of self-sacrifice, and he continuously brought, and like he said, he went beyond the letter of the law, you know, and they did even further. Let's do another, in the other sicha. That's the one sicha connected Pinchas with Yud Beis Tammuz, with the previous Rebbe, with the level of Mesiras Nefesh, level of self sacrifice. Another very interesting discussion in the portion of Pinchas is where the women, the daughters of Tzlofchad, who were wives, there were five daughters over there, and they came and they demanded, they said that their father had no sons, and because he had no sons, it turns out he's not going to get a portion in the land of Israel. And because at that point it wasn't yet said that a daughter inherits if there is no son. So they came. So basically, the verse says they came before Moshe and before Elazar the Kohen. Of course, Aaron already had passed on at that point. So they came before Moshe and before Elazar the Kohen, in the front of the leaders and the entire community, and they stood by the entrance of the tent of meeting. So what did they say? They said, why should our father's family be wiped out because he has no sons, he has his daughters? And then the Eibishter says that if there is no sons, then the daughter gets to inherit. That's how the Pasuk says. But here in the verse, it says over here that, and the Rebbe actually learns from this in other places. The Rebbe learns that we see, and Rashi brings it down, that they had a tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael, for Israel. It wasn't just that they wanted a portion just so they have a lot, but they loved Eretz Yisrael, and they wanted to, that their family should have a lot in Eretz Yisrael. So, if you read the verse, it seems a little bit strange, because it says they stood before Moshe and before Elazar. So it almost seems like they, one after the other, they stood before Moshe and before Elazar and before the Nisim. So how is that possible? Rashi wants to know. Well, if Moshe didn't know, so it must be they gave to Moshe and they asked Moshe the question, and then Moshe didn't know the answer, so they went to Elazar. And then they went to Elazar, he didn't know the answer, went to the Nisim. How is that possible, Rashi says, if Moshe doesn't know the answer? How could Elazar know the answer? That doesn't really fit, says Rashi. So, actually, in one commentary, Rashi says that we have to switch around the order of the verses have to be switched around, as if it would say he went to the leaders, to Elazar, and then he went to Moshe, so it went the other way around. Because, okay, then it would make sense, even though the verse, maybe Rebbe doesn't say, Rashi doesn't say it, but maybe the verse wants to talk about, in a respectful way, would be disrespectful. Why would they go to the Nesim first? And so it says they went motionless, but really the order was, first they went to the Nesim, then they went to Elazar, and then they went to Moshe. That's one opinion. The Rashi brings the other opinion, that it doesn't mean that they were asking one after the other, but they were sitting in the study hall. And everybody was there. Moshe was there, Elazar, the Nesim were all there sitting in the study hall. And then they presented the question before all of them. It still says before Moshe, before Elazar the Kohen, because you have one question, you ask it to everybody. So that means you're basically asking, you're not asking them after you asked by Moshe, but you ask them all together, basically. That's what Rashi says over there. What's interesting, the Rebbe has a whole discussion over here that we find basically in three places where the people came, they didn't know, and they complained. They wanted to find out what to do. So you had like by when it came to the Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach, we learned in the portion. So all of the parshas of in the Chumash Bamidbar, in the parshas Baal Lo Yischa, we learn a similar thing over there. Over there, it says that when God tells them to make the Korban Pesach, and some people couldn't do it in that time because they were tummy. So they basically, they came to Moshe, and they said that, why should we lose out and not to bring? And Hashem gives them the Pesach Sheni. So over there is also, it says they stood before Moshe, before Aaron, again. And Rashi comments over there as well, and says, well, they asked them while they were both sitting in the Beis Medrash, because how would Aaron know if Moshe didn't know? So similar, like over here. And the Rebbe just matches up. Then there's another time in Shlach, when they had this guy collecting wood on Shabbos, and they didn't know what to do with him. Over there too, they came and they to Moshe to present it, what to do. And over there also, there's the same issue. How would they ask Aaron if Moshe didn't know? Why would they ask it? And the Rebbe compares all the Rashi has different way, the way Rashi says it in all these different places. And the Rebbe explains it all very, very well. Yeah, good. That, you know, when people really want something sincerely and demand, they get. Hashem gives into them, and they accomplish what they set out to do when they ask from Hashem. And here we get like a new halacha, a new parsha. You know, this was actually Rashi says that it should have. This would have been the halacha anyways. It's not like they made the halacha. The halacha would have been that way anyways, but they had the merit that because of their complaint that it came about. That's the... And the Rebbe says that when we are... We should be like the Benos Slavchad. We should be demanding from Hashem also that he... bring us the Geula, to bring us redemption. And if we insist, then the Eibishter will bring it to us. That's the lesson of the B'nai Slavchot, that when you pray, that we should pray to Hashem and ask Hashem for the redemption. And if we really mean it, Hashem gives us into the to what we want. There's a story told about was a child, was once playing, and he desperately wanted the apple. You know, the mother didn't want to give him the apple. You know, in those days it maybe had been too expensive, and or maybe whatever, but she didn't want to give him the apple. So he quickly goes and makes the bracha. He makes a bur priyot, so his mother had no choice. She had to give him the apple, because it would have been a bracha in vain. So if we make a bracha, we insist that Hashem sent us Mashiach, and we bring out, so then we have the ability to sort of bring out the redemption, especially connected now to Shivasa B'Tammuz, the 17th day of Tammuz, which is coming up this coming Thursday. And as Rebbe always points out, of course we have all the laws of the destruction, that we have to mourn the destruction of the temple, but it's not there just for a person to become sad or become depressed and give up hope because of the fact that we're in exile, we're in the Golos, and all the sorrows that we have. We should not, that's not the goal. The goal is, on the contrary, the Rebbe therefore encouraged people to study the laws about the building of the Beis HaMikdash, the shape of the Beis HaMikdash. That is to encourage and to get the hope and the certainty that Mashiach will come and will take us out of Golos and will bring us Mashiach and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So those, these days, instead of being days of mourning, will turn into days of holidays in Yom Tovim, and we'll hope that this happens very, very soon in our days.